Welcome back. Today we're looking at two parts of GitHub that help you understand where a project has been and where your work may show up later. Releases and repository insights.
I like that pairing because releases feel very official and insights can feel a little mysterious. Both can answer the question, is this project active and where do my contributions fit?
Exactly. A release is about a version snapshot. Insights are about activity, participation, traffic, dependencies, and other signals that help you read the health of a repository.
So we're not just clicking around. We're learning how maintainers communicate progress and how contributors can tell what is happening.
A release is a named snapshot of a repository at a specific point in history, packaged and published for users. In a software project, it usually has a version number, release notes, download links for packaged files if the project has them, and source code archives that GitHub creates automatically.
And for a documentation project or a curriculum repo, a release might not include an app download at all. It might just mark a stable version of the material.
Right? When your pull request gets merged, your change becomes part of the default branch. It does not automatically mean a release goes out that same minute. Your work is included in the next release when the maintainer decides to publish one.
That timing can vary a lot then. Some projects release every few days, some every few weeks, and some only when there is enough meaningful change.
Yes, that pattern is called release cadence, which just means the project's usual rhythm for publishing versions.
The part that used to confuse me was the difference between a branch, a tag, and a release. They all point at code, but not in the same way.
A branch is a movable pointer. As commits are added to that line of work, the branch moves forward. A git tag is a named pointer to one specific commit. Once you use it to mark version v2.1.0, it should keep pointing to that exact commit.
So a tag is like saying, this commit is the one we mean when we say v2.1.0.
Yes, there are two common kinds of tags. A lightweight tag is basically just the name pointing to the commit. An annotated tag stores extra metadata such as the tagger date and a message, and it can be signed in some workflows.
And a GitHub release sits on top of that tag.
Exactly. Every GitHub release is backed by a tag. A tag without a release is still useful as a marker in Git history. When you create a release in GitHub, GitHub can create the tag for you if it does not already exist.
Let's talk about finding releases because GitHub pages can have a lot going on.
From a repository homepage, the releases area is usually in the right sidebar. It may show the latest version and a link to the full releases page. You can also go directly to github.com/owner/repo/releases if you know the owner and repository name.
At high zoom, that right sidebar may not feel like a sidebar anymore. It can move below the main content, so scrolling down is worth trying.
For screen reader navigation, start on the repository homepage and use heading navigation to find the releases heading. Some people use H or jump by heading level if their screen reader supports that. Then tab or use link navigation to reach the version link or the link that says how many releases exist.
Once you're on the releases list, each release behaves like its own section. Headings are your friend there.
Yes, a release entry usually has a title, often the version number, a badge such as latest or pre-release, a publication date, the tag name, the release notes, and asset downloads if the project attached any. GitHub also provides source code downloads as zip and tar. GZ archives.
The badge language is helpful. Latest usually means the newest stable release, while pre-release tells you it may be an alpha, beta, or release candidate.
And if you are scanning links, listen for asset names, compare links, tag links, and source code archive links. If there are compiled binaries, installers, or other packaged files, they usually appear in the assets area.
Version numbers look simple until you have to decide what they mean. What is semantic versioning?
Semantic versioning, often shortened to SEMVER, uses three numbers, major, minor, and patch. You will usually see it written as something like v2.1.3. The first number is major, the second is minor, and the third is patch.
So v2.0.0, v2.1.0, and v2.1.3 are telling different stories.
v2.0.0 usually signals a major release where breaking changes are possible. v2.1.0 usually means new features were added without breaking existing use. v2.1.3 usually means patch-level fixes, such as bugs fixed after v2.1.0.
When should a maintainer bump each number?
Bump major when existing users may have to change how they use the project. Bump minor when you add backward-compatible features. Bump patch when you fix something without changing the public behavior in a breaking way.
And then there are suffixes like alpha, beta, and RC.
Right, v2.1.0 alpha. 1 is an early preview, v2.1.0 beta. 2 means the feature set is closer but still being tested. v2.1.0 RC. 1 means release candidate, which is nearly final unless testing finds a problem.
Release notes are where the version number becomes readable. What should I listen for when I open them?
Good release notes group changes into categories. You might hear breaking changes, new features, bug fixes, and dependencies. A note might say a preferences file format changed, a new command was added, keyboard navigation was fixed, or a dependency was updated.
That is much easier than one giant paragraph of commit messages.
Definitely, many release notes also include issue or pull request numbers and usernames. For example, a bug fix might reference number 51 and credit the contributor who opened or merged it.
And the full changelog link is where a contributor can go looking for their own merged pull request.
Yes, that link usually opens a comparison between two tags such as V2, 0, 0 to V2, 1, 0. It shows the merged pull requests and commits between those versions so you can confirm whether your work is part of that release window.
What changes when you're the maintainer or you're helping prepare a release?
Then you may create the release yourself. In GitHub, you can go to github.com/owner/repo/releases/new. The form asks for a tag, a target branch, a release title, release notes, optional assets, and choices about draft or pre-release status.
If the tag does not exist yet, GitHub can create it when the release is published, right?
Yes, you type a new version tag, such as V2, 1, 0, or choose an existing tag. The target branch is usually main because that is the branch you want the version to mark. The title is often the same as the tag.
And the notes can be written by hand, or GitHub can generate release notes from merged pull requests since the last release.
Exactly. Auto-generated notes are a useful starting point, especially when pull request titles are clear. You can also attach assets such as binaries, installers, PDF, or any packaged files users need to download.
Draft and pre-release sound similar, but they are not the same thing.
A draft release is saved but not published to users yet. A pre-release is published but marked as not final, which is useful for alpha, beta, or release candidate versions. You can have a draft that later becomes a stable release or a draft that later becomes a pre-release.
The appendix also mentions accessibility agents for release notes. How should learners treat that?
The accessibility agents collection is a living catalog, so available commands may grow or change over time. If your environment includes the /draft-release agent, it can help prepare structured release notes from merged pull requests. It does not replace maintainer judgment, but it can save time and improve consistency.
What would that output usually include?
It can group changes under headings like new features, bug fixes, and dependencies, and include pull request numbers or contributor names when available. A maintainer should still review it for accuracy, remove noise, and call out breaking changes clearly.
Now let's move from releases to insights. What is the Insights tab actually for?
Insights is GitHub's area for repository activity and health signals. It can show recent activity, contributors, traffic, commits over time, code frequency, dependency information, forks, network activity, and community standards.
Can everyone see all of that?
Not always. On public repositories, many activity views are visible to anyone, but some areas, especially traffic or security-related information, may require maintainer or collaborator access. On private repositories, visibility depends on your access to that repository.
And Insights does not show everything people might imagine.
Correct, it is not a private analytics dashboard for individual visitors. It does not tell you every person who viewed a page. It gives aggregated repository signals, and some of those signals are limited to recent time windows.
How do you get there?
Open the repository and find the top navigation bar with tabs like code, issues, pull requests, actions, and insights. Activate insights, then use the insights subnavigation to choose pulse, contributors, traffic, commits, code frequency, dependency graph, network, forks, or community standards when those pages are available.
Pulse is a good first stop because the name is pretty literal. It tells you whether the project has a pulse.
Pulse summarizes recent activity over a selected period. You may find recently opened and closed issues, merged pull requests, open pull requests, commits, releases, and other activity counts.
As a contributor, I would use that to ask, is anyone reviewing things, merging things, and responding to issues?
Exactly. A project with recent merges and issue activity may be easier to engage with. A quiet project is not necessarily bad, but it changes your expectations. You might write a more patient contribution plan or check whether maintainers have posted guidance.
Charts and graphs can be awkward with audio output. What is a practical way to read them?
Use headings, tables, lists, and nearby text before trying to interpret the visual shape. Many GitHub Insights pages have accessible labels or data summaries, but not every chart gives the same experience. If the graph is hard to understand, look for counts, dates, contributor names, and links around it.
The contributor's view answers a different question: who builds this project?
Yes, it shows contributor activity, often with a graph and a table or list of contributors. You may hear names, commit counts, and activity over time. The table or list is usually more useful than the chart if you're relying on speech output.
For a new contributor, why does that matter?
It helps you understand whether the project has one main maintainer, a small active group, or a broad community. If one person does most of the work, be thoughtful about review time. If many people contribute, look for patterns in how pull requests are labeled, reviewed, and merged.
Traffic sounds more like a maintainer feature.
It often is. Traffic can show clones, views, unique cloners, unique visitors, referring sites, and popular content, depending on your permissions and the repository. It helps maintainers understand how people find and use the project.
But it is not a popularity contest.
Right? A sudden increase in views might mean a blog post linked to the repo, a release got attention, or users are looking for installation help. Referring sites can tell maintainers where people are coming from, and popular paths can show which docs or files need extra care.
There are several other insights pages that sound technical, but are useful once you know what question they answer.
Commits shows commit activity over time, and code frequency shows lines added and removed across the repository's history. Big spikes can reflect a migration, generated files, a cleanup, or a major feature. They are clues, not automatic proof of quality.
The dependency graph is the one I connect with security work.
Yes, the dependency graph shows the packages or libraries a project depends on, when GitHub can detect them. Dependabot can use that information to alert maintainers about vulnerable dependencies, and when configured, open pull requests to update them.
Network and forks are about copies and relationships between repositories.
The forks page shows who has forked the project. The network view can help you see branch and fork relationships, especially when work has happened outside the main repository. For contributors, it can reveal whether a project has active downstream experimentation.
Community standards feels less like analytics and more like a readiness checklist.
That is a fair reading. It looks for files and practices such as a README, license, contributing guide, code of conduct, issue templates, and security policy. If those are present and clear, a new contributor has a better chance of understanding how to participate.
So if I am assessing a project, I should not rely on one number or one graph.
Exactly. Read the latest release to see what is shipped. Check release notes to understand the kind of work being published. Use Pulse and contributors to see whether people are active, then use traffic, dependencies, network, forks, and community standards when you need a fuller picture.
And if I am looking for my own contribution, I trace it from pull request to merge to the default branch, to a tag, to a release, and maybe to the comparison link between releases.
Yes, that path turns a merged pull request into a published version you can point to. It is also a good reminder that open source work continues after the merge button. Packaging, notes, versions, downloads, and project health signals all help users trust the work.
That makes releases and insights feel less like extra tabs and more like part of the collaboration story.
That's the takeaway. Tags mark exact commits, releases explain and package those moments, and insights help you read the life of the repository around them.